Hello, hello, hello.
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 What hello.
I was waiting for that third hello. All right, so this is the 17th annual.
Is it?
Big Planet Comics Podcast. Yeah, it's the 17th one.
Annual?
Yeah, every year we do one of these. All right, so let's see. Let's go around and introduce everybody. I got nicknames for everybody this week. First, we got Jared, a.k.a. Major Bloodsmith.
Yep. Yo.
And we got Nick, Batty Boy Liapis.
Batty Boy.
I'm Kevin X-Factor Panetta.
Oh, dear.
And we have a special guest this week.
Hooray.
Hi.
This is Eden, Little Red Riding Hood, and the Outlaws Miller.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
So, everybody's got nicknames for a reason. Jared, why don't you explain to people why you're AKA Major Blood?
Was it G.I. Joe 5 or 4?
I don't know.
Oh, was it G.I. Joe Cobra or was it G.I. Joe Snake Eyes?
Or was it G.I. Joe Real American Hero?
In a recent issue of some title with the words G.I. Joe in it, they had a picture of the awesome Major Sebastian Blood, who is kind of a lame dude in almost every way, except for his appearance on the cover of this magazine, which has just the eye patch, and he's changed his hairstyle a little bit. I don't know if he's quite as annoyingly European as he used to be. Other than that, he looks exactly like me from a year ago.
Yeah, he's looking mighty dapper.
He does. He's wearing a suit. That's true.
Yeah.
That's good. Like me, I wear suits all the time.
He looks and sounds exactly like you.
He does.
That's the creepy part.
In the audiobook.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw they were doing like photo covers for all the G.I. Joe comics in the next couple of months, and they just have pictures of action figures on them.
Oh, I was going to send in my picture.
That's lazy.
Yeah, it's really lazy.
You should send in your picture. That'd be amazing if they had a variant cover with you on it.
Yeah, you can be like, will you guys make an action figure of me? Like we already did.
Sweet.
So, Batty Boy, Nick.
Batty Boy. Well, in the first issue of Detective Comics, somebody pointed out how stupid it was that...
Batman The Dark Knight.
Yeah, Batman The Dark Knight. It was about anyway, they pointed out how stupid it was that Two-Face was now One Face, and I was like, wait, he's also calling Batman Batty Boy, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that's slang for gay.
Really?
it's like
a sort of Jamaican patois thing.
Two-Face is Jamaican.
He's like, you can call me One Face now, Batty Boy.
it was all because of Ali G. He was just, you know, he always called people Batty Boys.
And then they just picked it up without knowing what it was.
I don't know. I think it was supposed to be very like Edward G. Robinson, kind of like, oh, Batty Boy.
Yeah.
Right. So, Eden, you're a Little Red Riding Hood in the Outlaws. Do you know why?
Because you left me this
Red
Hood and the Outlaws number one.
Yeah, I did put a copy of Red Hood and the Outlaws number one on Eden's chair. And Little Red Riding Hood because that's your Facebook picture.
This is true.
Yeah, so...
makes sense.
But also, Eden sent Jared a... like an article this week that was like a review of Red Hood and the Outlaws number one that gave it a 10 out of 10.
It was the greatest review ever.
It
the
was.
Greatest comic ever.
I can't remember the guys. Do you remember the guy who wrote it? It was on Pop Matters.
Yeah, I forget.
And
it had comparisons to Freud, just other very pretentious things. It's like not in this comic at all.
And you were like, oh, I think it's a joke. But then I looked and there was another review that this guy wrote that was, or it was like a preview of Green Arrow number two. And it was like Green Arrow 2 and the Psychology of the Hunt.
I think he's very committed.
He is, and he was talking about how J.T. Kroll seductively entwined the Smallville universe with the new DC universe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just like he seductively had Arsenal freebasing off an iPad.
Yeah, which we might be talking about a little bit later. I know we love to talk about that.
It's hard to not talk about it all the time.
We've got a viewer mail question this week.
Oh,
that
is this relevant?
Yeah, and I'm Kevin X-Factor Panetta because I realize right now I'm watching 6 hours of X-Factor a week.
That's really sad.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's not something I would admit.
I like to tell people about the terrible things that I do, though.
Are you watching both the British and the American?
That's the thing, yeah.
Nice. Wait. Are you alternating or doing blocks?
No, I watch them when they're on.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, they're on 3 times a week each?
Four times a week.
So really...
No, twice a week. Each show's on twice a week. And right now they're like, they do, each one's like an hour and a half long. So I'm watching 6 hours of X Factor a week.
Nice. Oh yeah. And this week's episode of the Big Planet Comics podcast is brought to you by the X Factor.
And Pepsi.
And Hurricane.
Yeah. I have a soft spot for singing shows. I watched the entirety of the Glee Project.
What about
in
the
one
Voice?
Day.
Oh, you did. Wow. It's really sad.
Yeah. I watched The Voice. I watch American Idol.
Yeah.
Yep. My favorite things are, Tezuka Comics, American Idol. And Jean-Luc Godard movies. Yeah.
That does sum you
and up Pepsi.
Very well.
If you guys want to send us some money, we love crystal clear Pepsi and all other kinds of Pepsi.
Pepsi throwback.
Pepsi One. Is that a thing?
Yeah. That's our special message to the PepsiCo. And if you guys are listening to this, of course, as we always say every week, you can subscribe to this on iTunes. You can like us on Facebook.
Ooh.
And you can probably do other things.
You don't have to actually like us. Just click like.
We don't have a Tumblr. We don't have a Twitter.
We just are tumbling.
We do have a Twitter. We just don't use it.
Do we have a Twitter?
I thought we did.
Oh, we should tweet about some stuff.
Yeah, let's... You should totally tweet.
Yeah, Eden, you're pretty
tweet-tastic.
Yeah, you're pretty prolific on Twitter, right?
I enjoy the Twitter.
Why don't you give a shout? What's your Twitter handle?
Comics Girl.
Nice. At Comics Girl. So send her a message.
Tweet at that Comics Girl.
Tweet at her. All right. So yeah, let's get right into this. Let's do some viewer mail. Woo!
Yeah.
So last week we asked people to send in questions, and lo and behold, we got 3 questions this week.
Whoa. It's a new record. People send in questions every week. That never happens.
That's true.
I think this is a new record, right? We've never gotten 3 questions from 3 different people.
From 3 different people. We've definitely gotten 3 questions from one person before.
Who would that be?
And that person, she sent a question this week as well, which is nice.
All right. Number one fan. All
right. So let's get started. You ready? We've got a question from Chris.
Okay.
This is Chris Campbell. He sent us quite a few questions.
Yep.
He's a good guy.
Way to out him on the show, Kevin.
He's tall.
So he says, I've got a question about introducing people to creators, specifically artists. If you're a big...
Like shake their hands and say thanks for doing good comics.
No, he says other stuff. That's not what he says, though.
Wasn't that how you introduced the creators?
Yeah, yeah.
I chose.
Not physically.
Oh.
Yeah, no. Well. You know what he means.
Yeah.
If you're a big fan of a particular artist and want to hand somebody a book to introduce them to the artist, which would you choose? One, a book that shows the artist's career best work, his peak, even though the story kind of sucks. Or two, the best story, even though the art is not clearly his best.
Whoa, that's complicated.
Great job so far, guys. Peace.
I'm
Chris. Okay, so just to reiterate, basically.
Please do. I'm confused.
It's like, say we want to show somebody
Like a Jim Lee comic, right?
Like a Jim Lee. Would we want to show somebody a Jim Lee comic?
Probably not.
Or say we wanted to show somebody... I'm trying to think of like a good example of
Raphael
this.
Albuquerque.
Okay, Raphael Albuquerque.
I always want to introduce people to Mr.
So
Albuquerque.
Say the art's really good in Mondo Urbano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe the story's a little bit better in another comic.
Another comic that he did. Like, you know, Fear Agent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So which one would you give him?
Fear Agent.
Yeah.
Because Fear Agent is awesome.
I think a good story is definitely, you need to have a good story.
Yeah. But his art is actually probably better in Fear Agent too.
Yeah, yeah. So it's tough. I'll say a lot of times people do their best work when they're working with the best writers.
Yeah. In general, I would definitely go with a better story.
So let's think about it. Can you think of examples of like people who do like really good art on a not so good comic?
Neil Adams and anything he writes himself.
But then his best stuff is the stuff he did with Denny O'Neill,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Back in the Green Arrow, Green Lantern days. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so Chris, our answer is
complicated.
It's complicated. It's no, complicated.
I mean, I could read a.
How about Frank Miller?
Oh,
you got a lot of art there with the story fluctuating over the years.
Yeah,
the
art. But his best stuff is the stuff that's written well, right? Like Dark Knight Returns, and
yeah, all of his best art is written by somebody else.
Yeah, well, no, he wrote Dark Knight Returns.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
He definitely did.
What happened to him?
That's a good question.
That is the question for the ages.
But yeah, so thanks for the question, Chris.
Yeah,
thanks. I don't feel like we very satisfactorily answered that, but...
Nope.
Sorry. What do you think, Eden?
I think best story.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah. I think we all think best story.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of... Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anything. All right, so let's move on to our next question. This person also gets a nickname this week. This question is from Jessica Swagger Jacker Spriggings.
Nice. Wow.
Because we all went to eat Indian food, and I ordered the matar paneer, and then she ordered the same thing, and she jacked my swagger.
Jacked her swagger. And by all, you do not mean any of us.
Yeah. That's true.
Kevin's
yeah.
The only
not
one
all of us.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that was cold-hearted.
Cold-hearted.
That was cold-hearted. But this is a good question. Okay, so she says, hello, podcast gentlemen.
Hello.
Inappropriate because Eden is here this week.
Awkward.
Sexist.
Yeah, that's very sexist. You should start writing for DC Comics.
Buzzing.
They do need more women.
They do. There are a lot of women. They just don't want any of them.
That's true. They do. They just only want to be prostitutes or wear bikinis.
Or get murdered.
Well, they just bring them their drinks.
Probably.
Yeah. JT Krell's like, I'm gonna write this comic. Get me a soda. She's like,
all right.
I definitely picture the DC offices being like Mad Men or something at this point.
Yeah.
But that's the best part is like Jessica could start working for DC and be better than like at least 3 of their writers currently.
That's definitely true.
Having never more than read a comic in her life.
Yeah. We're looking at you, JT Krell, Scott Lobdell, and
somebody else.
Dan Jurgens. Dan Jurgens is okay though.
Yeah,
he's a bit of a journeyman, but
Jessica
he's all right.
Would still be better.
She'd be better.
Yeah.
All right. So, hello, podcast ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, that's nice of her.
Yeah, that was nice of her. If very I heard correctly in last week's podcast, you specifically asked for me to send in a question this week. That's right, isn't it? I'm sure it must be. I think I remember that a little bit differently. I think we said don't send us any more questions. But maybe not. Maybe let's just say we did.
That's
ask
what
you
the restraining order said.
Yeah, that is definitely what the restraining order said. So here we go. So here it goes. If you can believe it, I'm having a rough time at work lately.
Oh.
That's unfortunate.
I can believe it though.
I can believe it. A lot
Who doesn't?
Of, yeah. Me. You're telling me, man, I hate Mondays.
Preach to the choir.
I love lasagna though. I spend lots of time thinking about my coworkers getting injured, but I feel like I'm running out of scenarios.
Me too.
Do you have any favorite comics-inspired injury ideas I could add to my daydreaming repertoire? A big old bucket of thanks, best friends. She always calls, you know, it's always okay, and then she calls us her best friends, and then it gets weird.
Yeah.
It's
awkward.
Start creeping out.
And then it says at the end, Jessica, with an exclamation point, because that's her name, and she's excited about it.
Like Stan Shaw?
Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah. Stan Shaw has an exclamation point as part of his official artist name.
I don't even know who that is.
Boring
exactly
segue.
Exactly the point.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, people get injured in comics all the time, right?
Yeah. I think Jared's just stalling because he doesn't have an answer.
I have one
answer
that popped into mind as soon as you read that letter from her.
Oh, no. Okay. Go all for
right,
it.
Let's go.
Oh, sorry.
We're going to go around the table. Well, you can go first, Jared.
All right. We're really going around the table. This isn't Kevin just lying or going
clockwork.
Catty counter.
Yeah, this is clockwork if you guys are keeping track at home.
Okay. Clockwork with me. The classic, I don't know if it's Tales from the Crypt or whatever, but back in the 50s, EC got in big trouble for doing the really horribly graphic horror comics, and the classic one they always did was the injury to the eye motif, which the cover was a close-up of someone's eyeball as they were about to stab a hypodermic needle or just an ice pick into it.
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
Yeah, so inject the things into your coworker's eyes.
Well, no, she's not actually going to do it. She's just going to think about this happening to them.
Oh, okay.
So that's okay. Oh. We all think about that.
Well, that's less interesting.
I got a good one.
I'm thinking about stabbing Jared in the face right now.
Yeah. Hypodermic. I have a hypodermic needle if you need it.
Okay, cool. Perfect. All right.
Anyway, but mine was there's an issue, probably several actually, but I can remember at least once where Johnny Storm set like the thing's pants on fire. And I was like, oh man, that would be great because it would be like painful and humiliating at the same time. So go with there that. Go. Set their pants on fire. I mean, I don't recommend you do it, but.
No, but think about it.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eden, you got one?
Actually, speaking of Frank Miller, I'm going to go with the entire run of Sin City.
Just everything that happens
yes.
in Sin City.
It seems like he came up with very creative ways to kill people.
Like hanging somebody out of the side of a car and dragging them on the ground.
That was a good one.
Or stepping on their stuff until it's all squished.
Yep, pulling it out.
Yeah. Pulling it out.
Yeah, that's good.
Kevin, what you got?
Well, I think it's in a Green Lantern comic.
Uh-oh.
There's a part where Kyle Rayner's girlfriend gets stuffed into a refrigerator.
Is she unhappy about that?
I think so. Well, she's dead.
Oh.
Yeah,
so
and stuffed into
murdered.
A refrigerator. Also, there's...
it could be like a, you know, a fraternity prank. You know?
No, it wasn't like that.
That would be a terrible prank.
That sounds like a fraternity prank from like prank from like one of the Skulls movies.
Yeah, Skulls too.
Or there are a ton of them. Let's see. There's Arsenal, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Beating up people with a dead cat.
You can do that.
That is a good
You can definitely do that.
Especially if
he also, in the same issue, whips his wife with a hose.
Yep.
You do that.
And she staples him with a stapler, right? Isn't
you can do that
true?
Oh.
And basically that would be appropriate in an office.
Yeah, because that would be handy. Yeah.
Handy.
Oh, we should have tried to focus on good office comic injuries.
Basically just read Arsenal, Rise of Arsenal number 3, and do whatever he does in that comic.
Or you could picture one of your coworkers falling off a bridge, and you're Spider-Man. You try to save them as if they're Gwen Stacy. You catch them with their web, but then their neck snaps.
Except I feel like she would be like, oh, they're I'm not going to save them.
Yeah. Well, that's fine, too. They can just fall off a bridge.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm sure has happened in a
picture
comic.
You're Spider-Man, and like J. Jonah Jameson's falling off a bridge, and you're like, meh.
You just let him die.
Yeah, like, whoops.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there must be, there are tons of other, well, people get injured in comics all the time.
Yeah, especially in the new DC comics.
You could be Superman, you know, the iconic smashing the car, but one of your coworkers could be under the car.
Or in the car.
Or in the car. Yeah, but then the airbags might go off. But it was the 30s.
It was an old car.
Yeah, they didn't have airbags back then. So that's good. Thank God for that. So that's just a few ways.
All right, next question.
Next question. Let's move on. Right. So this is from, I'm told that his last name is pronounced Dembiski. Is that right? Matt Dembiski?
Yes.
Really? It looks like Dembiki to me.
Wow.
Matt, you'll have to tell us, basically. Yeah. But Matt's a local comics creator. He does a comic called Shock, which is like about a shark.
Yep. He's done
and that sounds like shark.
It does.
Oh,
I'm weird.
Making the connections.
I think it's the Mayan word for shark.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But he says, hey, guys, with Halloween coming up, I thought it'd be nice to talk about some good horror comics, whether contemporary work or classics that have been reprinted. Hey, don't tell us how to do our job, buddy. I hear Bernie Wrightson's work in Creepy is getting reprinted. On a side note, I really enjoy the podcast. Well, that's nice. You can, what I said a second ago. Okay.
It's not too late.
You guys make a good team. Oh, you guys. Again.
Oh, man. This
sexist.
We have the worst listeners in the world, except for the ones we love. We love you guys.
He says he gets a chuckle a minute, which has recently been, that'd be like 80 or 90 chuckles because these things have been really long.
Yeah, that's like a rate of a scary movie.
You know? Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's scary movie, you get a chuckle a minute, but they tell like 15 jokes in a minute, only one of them is funny.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he says thanks, which is nice because we haven't actually done anything.
With an X?
No, with a KC. Oh, okay. He's a professional.
KC.
Wait, what? KS.
Spell check.
And then it says Matt, and that's his name.
That is.
All right. So let's go around the table again. But this time we'll do it backwards.
Whoa.
Round table.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'm going to start, though. I'm going to start with Nick. We're going counterclockwise.
That's not even backwards. It's just jumping around.
Well, you can go backwards. You can start wherever.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right. You go first.
What do we do it? What do we do?
So Matt wants to know. He just wants us to talk about some good horror comics.
Oh.
Well, The Secret. I can't remember who wrote and drew
that. That is written by Mike Richardson.
Is that it?
Yeah, it was a Dark Horse comic years ago. It is very good.
Wow, good call.
Well, why don't you tell people what it's about, though? I mean, don't just tell them the name. They might think you're talking about the Oprah book.
It's hard to explain without giving it away, but basically a kid gets locked away for a while, and he escapes, and then he finds out what was going on. It's really hard to explain anything. It's a secret.
It's
I can't really tell you too much about it.
It's got a creepy old house in it.
And also, if you want something new that's horror, Severed. Is really good.
Severed is
I just actually read the new issue this week. It's pretty great. It's slowly building stuff, and it's kind of cool because in Severed, like, the first issue starts with a guy as an old man, and he has one arm, and he's like, something, you know, bad happened to me in my past. And there's a part where he's talking to somebody, like a crazy, like, killer who you know is a killer, and he makes him put his arm in a bear trap, and he's like, all right, now do you trust your friend? I'm going to offer him $20. To pull this pin, $80. But you know, it's like kind of, you're like, oh god, is this the part where he loses his arm? So it's like pretty good. Like, you know, I'm not gonna tell you what happens, but it's awesome.
Yeah,
cool. Jared,
pass.
Are really? You can't think of a single good horror comic?
Jared hates horror.
I got all distracted by Nick. It was a good story.
Okay,
Jared really hates
what
horror.
Okay, I'm gonna give you one. Okay,
no, the one that popped in my head when he was saying that is another Dark Horse comic, which I remember almost nothing about except that it was creepy. Was The Milkman Murders?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. But you don't remember anything about it?
No, I just remember it. Well,
it's about a milkman murdering people.
Yeah, it was written by Joe Casey.
There you go.
I can't remember who the artist was.
Oh, come on, Kevin.
The art is great, too.
Yeah, the art's really good.
Oh, wait. And to do the plug, the book, The Creepy Collection by Bernie Wrightson, is out already. So, Matt, if you want to get it, it's available.
There you go.
Matt, come buy it.
Yep, we just made like $15 or whatever.
Ooh, yeah, do it, Matt.
All right, I'm going to say I'm a big fan of the work of Hideshi Hino, who's a Japanese horror creator. Stuff. And the best collection of stuff he's done, I don't know if this is available, but it's still a good horror comic, so I don't care. It's called Lullabies from Hell.
Yeah.
And that's Hideo, or Hino writing sort of autobiographical comics with horror twists to them. So, like, his wife was pregnant, and then he wrote a comic about all the babies in Japan being born as monsters.
I read that one. It was creepy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all very creepy, and it's very awesome. And it's good stuff. Also, of course, the classic EC comics that Jared was talking about.
Yeah, or Rise of Arsenal number 3.
Yeah. anything Tales from the Crib, Vault of Horror, Shock Suspense stories, all that stuff is fantastic. Eden?
I'm going to go with Hellboy. I mean, it's more of like classic horror, not necessarily the graphic horror, but really good. Also Ghost Project, which was out last year.
Oh, yeah,
it was really good.
Yeah, that was also really
good. Was that
good.
Steve Lieber that did Ghost Project, the guy that drew
I think it was Ralston.
Oh, yeah. Steve Ralston. Yeah. Yeah,
it was about like an old Soviet weapon, right? That was like actually supernatural based.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh,
that's cool.
I remembered one. When you mentioned Hino, Junji Ito, who's another great Japanese horror cartoonist who has a really clean art style. So it's not Archie styled, but like very clean art like an Archie book. And then terrible, terrible things happen to all the people in his books. And they're really good.
They are good. And I guess Museum of Terror those are the two that are
Museum of Terror has a lot like the Tomie stories, but also the Uzumaki, which is all about spirals. And one of the creepiest parts was noticing that, you know, you're slowly going insane. They look down and notice these spirals in their fingerprints and leads to having to try to remove the spirals. And it was awful.
Did he also do that? Is it Gyo or Gyo?
Gyo. Yeah. The one with the zombie fish with cybernetic implants and sharks coming out of the ocean to
eat people. Shark with legs in it, and it's terrifying.
Coming down the streets of Tokyo to eat people.
Is that what that's about? I always thought it was about a haunted Geo Metro.
No. That's my comic.
That's Nick's comic that he's writing. So everybody, thanks for the questions. That was Chris, Jessica, and a new question. New question maker.
Questioner.
New question maker. So with Matt. So if you guys have questions, you should send them to us.
Matt the question maker.
So send your questions to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com and we'll answer them.
Yes, no matter what they are.
Usually unsatisfactorily. But it's definitely one of our favorite parts
satisfied.
Of the show. Yeah, I'm satisfied. I feel pretty satisfied with that. Mm. All right. So, as we talked about, we read all these DC books.
Oh, we did.
And there were so many of them. And
burned us out.
Yeah, and we were super burned out. And so this week we decided to read hundreds of graphic novels. So let's get into that with our reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right, so let's get right into this with Any Empire by Nate Powell. This book, I think, came out during the first week of these. Everything I know now is on, like, the DC Comics calendar. So I'm like, this came out the first week of the DC Comics stuff.
About the time Batgirl came out.
So it's like the AD-BC split. It's like pre-reboot.
Yeah. So most of us read this kind of a long time ago.
I cannot remember what happened in it. I read it so long ago.
But Eden actually just read this just recently.
Yes.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I'm going to ask you to kind of tell people what it was about.
It's about kids in a suburb, and also war games. You know, kids just playing war as they do. There's some turtles being mutilated.
Oh, that's definitely true.
The turtles. Yes.
It's more of a mood piece than having an actual plot.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
But you know, Nate Powell's art is amazing, and he has just gorgeous silent pages. It's really good.
Yeah, no, it's I think one thing, we all liked it a lot.
Yeah.
But
we're all a little bit confused by it. Yeah, a little bit.
One thing Nate Powell is, I don't know if I'd say he's famous for it because he does comics. He's not famous for anything. But
Wang.
Sorry, Nate, but
he's comics famous.
Yeah, he is comics famous. But yeah, I mean, Any Empire is like you said, it's the tone that the book sets more than anything that's important about it.
Mood piece.
It's a mood piece. Yeah, indeed. And it's kind of about
Jared's ring.
Like the kind of games we play as kids and how they relate into the fantasies that we have as adults. And by doing that, it kind of creates this weird narrative that is almost really hard to understand.
Yeah. Right, it kind of evolves to like he's, you know, in the beginning he's playing with G.I. Joes and kind of acting out what's happening. Then it kind of reflects what's happening in his life. And it's a little too confusing in this than I thought it would be. But either way, I don't know. I think I liked it.
No,
I feel like I have to read it again.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a few times even. There's a lot going on in it.
And like Eden said, the art is like beautiful. His stuff is very, like his line work is, it seems like he uses a brush for everything and it's like just, I don't know, magnificent.
Off the chain. Off the chain, yo.
It is off the chain, as Kraven the Hunter would say. Yes. Do you want to tell people about Kraven the Hunter?
Are we out on that yet?
No, we're actually going to talk about that. Never mind.
We'll get to that.
All right. So, so that's Any Empire. We're probably going to keep it short on a lot of these graphic novels. Like, they all take us like 6 hours to read, and then we talk about them for like 30 seconds. But so we're going to move on to Infinite Kung Fu, which is a massive book.
It is.
It's about 500 pages, I think. And this is by Kagan McLeod.
Yep.
Who sounds Irish.
Irish-Canadian.
But anyway. But it doesn't matter where he's from. What matters is the book. Jared, why don't you tell people what Infinite Kung Fu is about?
All right. This one blew my mind in the best way. It's basically Kagan, whoever this guy is, as far as I know, he's never done anything anyone's heard of. Is this true?
Yeah, I think he's been working on this for a very long time.
Yeah, I think this is because there's like a little introduction by somebody, maybe Azrael or somebody, talking about how like this guy just came out of nowhere and been doing bits and pieces of this book. And
he was posting them online, I think, like a little bit at a time. And then
the introduction is actually by Gordon Liu.
I saw that.
Who's like from like Shaw Brothers movies?
Yes.
Right?
Which is highly appropriate.
Which were very influential on this book, obviously. Yeah. But
it's basically like this Kagan kid watched every Shaw Brothers kung fu flick from the 70s and every other kung fu flick from the 70s. Watched every blaxploitation flick from the 70s, and then really liked zombies.
Yeah, and well, he probably watched some zombie movies from the 70s too.
That's true.
Possibly zombie kung fu movies from the '70s.
Yeah, that's true.
Possibly, yeah,
with blaxploitation elements. But yeah, so he's created a kind of alternate Chinese epic where China has been overrun by the living dead, and in this time frame of the past, the great kung fu masters have tried to choose some new disciples who will now save the earth from this zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, they're kind of like gods in this.
Yeah.
And yeah, they each have like a disciple, and some of them start turning on there.
Becoming evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them become very evil, and then there's lots of kung fu in it.
Yeah, there are elements.
There's an infinite amount of kung fu.
Nigh infinite. I believe one of my favorite moves is the one where the guy removes his arm at the shoulder and then uses it as a club to beat people to death and then reattaches it. Or grows a new one. I forget. He's using some awesome kung fu, though.
Which also happened in the amazing movie Deadly Prey.
Yeah. And in my life.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah.
If anybody's wondering why Nick is the way he is, it's because he got beat to death with somebody's arm and then he was reanimated.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, we were talking about Nate Powell's brushwork. I mean, one thing that really stands out in this book is the art. I mean, Keegan MacLeod is like, it seems like he incorporates like a lot of calligraphy and stuff into the art. And it's just like when people move in this comic, people are moving.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Like, he has actually kung fu fight scenes where you can see the moves happening. It's kind of like a very Kirby-esque style where it's everything's laid out and you see how things have happened and see what's about to happen. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's very well done. And if you're a fan of, like, say, Sui Hark films,
yeah,
I'd say this is very reminiscent of a lot of that crazy cottage cheese face Sui Hark stuff.
It's definitely kung fu, like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also got the... it's also got like the huge epic scale to it too, which is really fits and works really well.
Yeah, you know, it's 500 pages.
Exactly.
It's a lot of pages.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, so far so good. Any Empire is good. Infinite Kung Fu is good.
Speaking of a lot of pages, what's next?
Well, no, actually next is Bake Sale. This did not have a lot of pages. It did have a lot of recipes.
Yeah, some pages.
Yeah. So this is a book by Sarah Varon. Nick told me he had something funny to say about this book.
Oh, I did have something funny. So, well, I'll let somebody else actually describe the book.
Okay. Well, Eden just read this as well. Yes. So Eden, why don't you tell people what this is about?
It's about a cupcake that runs a, you know, bakery.
Oh, you know.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
Whoa. I just realized that is much like all the barbecue places which have the happy, delighted pig on their signs.
Yes. Yeah.
What kind of cupcake runs a bakery?
I don't know.
A cupcake who's good friends with an avocado and a peanut.
This cupcake also plays in a band, and this cupcake is trying to save up money to go to Turkey.
To meet Turkish Delight.
Right? Yes.
Nice.
Who is a Turkish Delight.
And also a chef.
Yeah.
Right. Who makes Turkish Delight, I think.
Yes. Yeah. He's got a pecan in his head.
He has a pistachio on his head.
Oh, it's a pistachio.
I think Turkish Delight's a guy.
All right.
I think Cupcake is a girl.
They're both really just know. Food.
Yeah.
I think you're projecting.
They're androgynous. They're like Morrissey.
Yeah. Like Morrissey. All the characters in the comic are food.
Yeah. They don't have sex with each other.
No. Really know. Aren't there humans at the end? Like they go to a concert and they're like humans walking dogs or something?
Do they eat them?
There's some weird crossover.
Dogs. Which is odd.
Yeah, there's dogs, but there's no humans.
Yeah, there are no humans.
I don't think they're humans.
They go to a boxing fight and it's humans.
Because
it's Joe Calzaghe versus Roy Jones Jr.
That's true.
See?
Yeah, she should have made it like Joe Calzone versus like Roy Scones Jr.
Yeah. Roy Scones Jr.
But so, Eden, did you like this book?
I did. I mean, it's short. It's pretty simple, but it's fun.
Yeah, the art's really cute.
It is super cute.
I have to say I wasn't a huge fan of it just because it's a kid's book.
Yeah. Yes, but it's a kid's book that teaches you about being poor and having to work hard.
Which I guess is nice to learn.
And you know, having to give up on your band because you have to work.
I don't feel like kids would like this for some reason, though.
Yeah.
It's like a kid's book that's not written towards kids.
Right. It's a kid's book for grown-ups.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the way I thought of this was like every sort of twee indie comics person that lives in Brooklyn likes to think of themselves as a cute little cupcake, you know? And that like is friends with a bunch of cute like non-threatening avocados.
Yeah,
and, like,
hates potatoes.
That's a weird thing.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like the inherent, you know, continued racism towards the Irish immigrants in New York City. It's kind of manifest.
Well, there is
itself.
This kind of racist part in here where I mean, racist against potatoes.
That's what I'm saying.
But like the potato wants to play drums in the band. Yeah. Which is, I have to say, I like my job. I get to talk about potatoes playing drums. But
you're a potato that plays drums.
Yes. So, and Cupcake says, what potatoes playing drums? Everybody knows potatoes don't have any rhythm. Yeah. I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what, cupcake? What's next, Tom?
There's a lot of recipes in this book.
There are.
And teach you how to bake like certain things. But mostly I wanted to bake this book. I wanted to like put it in the oven and just set it to bake.
Was it just way too cutesy for you?
It was too much. I couldn't take it.
Yeah, it was. It's a very precious.
I went into diabetic coma like halfway through.
But
this is too sweet.
It is too sweet. So if you're super sweet and you like super sweet things,
but it is a little creepy that a cupcake is baking things. And then there was a scene where a tomato buys a carrot cake.
That's true.
Oh,
yeah.
And the cupcake serves cupcakes.
Yeah, it's
really. You would think since the cupcake hates potatoes so much. That the cupcake would just eat like shepherd's pie or something all the time.
That would be like
my French fry chips joint or something.
Yeah.
Like my idea for like a restaurant where I served humans.
I've already decided I'm calling this podcast Roy Scones Jr.
Nice.
And nice. I'm going to Photoshop a scone onto Roy Jones Jr.'s head.
Nice.
And that's that. All right. So yeah, that was Bake Sale. I mean, it's a cute book. It's if you like stuff like Smile, I think, or stuff like like Hope. Yeah, it's not like Smile.
No, I feel like kids who are like into like whose parents are into indie music might like it.
Or at least
or if you're into indie music, you'll probably like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you like the precious elements of blankets, maybe.
If you listen to Cub, which nobody listens to Cub. No. But if you listen to Cub, you will like this book.
There you go.
All right, so moving on, let's talk about Like a Sniper Lining Up His Shot. This is a hardcover by Jacques Tardy. Which I will say I was surprised to find out that this came out last year. Jacques Tardy must be in his like
70s
at this point. Yeah.
It's a little late.
Yeah, but this is adapted from a novel by Jean-Patrick Manchetti. That's not right.
No, it's Manchetti. Which is my whenever I heard that I was like I pictured a guy that was half man half machete,
which is amazing. Which is what the movie
Manchetti.
That fits the book a lot.
That's what
actually.
The movie Machete should have been. Yeah, how do you say that last name, Jared? You're Mr. Frenchy.
Jean-Patrick Manchetti.
Oui.
Jared likes croissants.
He does like croissants. I like croissants. Everybody likes croissants.
Not me.
I prefer scones.
Both of them surrender way too often for me.
Yeah, well, croissants are good, but scones are better boxers. All right, Nick, why don't you tell people what Like a Sniper Lining Up His Shot is about?
It's about a sniper lining up a shot. No, but actually, it's about a...
eventually.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, eventually, yeah. It's about this this guy who's like an older, like an assassin, and he wants to retire, but the group he works for doesn't want him to retire. They're like, we want him to keep killing people. And so he tries to retire and things go terribly wrong. It's hard to tell, you know, too much about it without giving away the entire plot, but you know, he goes back to his hometown and he tries to hook up. That sounds really weird, but like he tries to reunite with like his old girlfriend.
He goes back to the Jersey Shore and tries to hook up with some chicks and their grenades.
Yeah. But it's like he's literally returned home to the girl who he left saying, I will return in 10 years after becoming a contract killer sort of thing. And has never talked to her since.
And she's all like, cabs are here. And then they get wasted and then
they GTL.
Yeah, geez, they GTL.
Yeah.
But then that instance, it means guns.
And then there's
TEL. I don't know what
there's
TEL
a situation. Did we talk Jersey Shore talk last time?
Yes, we did.
Oh, I'm sorry, everybody.
I don't even know what you're talking
I
about.
I need a cabs are here sound effect on here.
Yeah.
Here, let's go to a random sound effect and see if it's cabs are here. That is very inappropriate. Okay, so
it was good. It was really good.
It reminds me a lot of kind of like how you were saying you don't want to give away too much. There are a lot of twists and turns in this book.
A lot.
It reminds me a lot of at least some of the older spy movies, stuff like Charade or like Hopscotch, which is a great movie with Walter Matthau. And actually, it reminded me a lot of this movie that came out about a year ago called The American that had George Clooney in it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, cool. In tone and stuff like that. It's just kind of about this lone guy who has this terrible job that he does, and he makes connections with people, but they're all very tenuous, and he tries to kind of reconnect with people and stuff.
The narration is pretty great, too. Like, he describes everything in detail, like his guns and how he cleans them and, you know, what kind of gun he needs for certain situations and stuff like that, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Jacques Tardy's a French guy, obviously, and... like a lot of times French books get translated into English and they're not so great. But Kim Thompson, who's actually, one of the guys that runs Fantagraphics, who published this book, has been translating all these Tardy books.
Yeah.
And the translations have been out of this world. I mean, they've been fantastic. Yeah, really you don't get that kind of like sense stiffness that you're reading a translation. Yeah. It's not stiff. Like it's all really well done. And the arts, I mean, Tardy's like a master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His stuff's really loose, but he's really great at backgrounds and sort of economy of line. And he's, yeah, I don't know. He's Jacques Tardy.
He's quite prolific.
Yeah, I mean, and I'd say even if this story doesn't sound that interesting to you, read one of his other books. Read like Adele Blanc Sec or read Arctic Marauder.
Or just, It Was the War of the Trenches.
Yeah, he writes a lot of different genres, yeah. And everything he does is great. He's definitely one of my favorite creators of all time.
And really, it is the sort of thing that if you're not into the story, the art does carry it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really easy to follow. It's not like some weird indie comic that's like any Empire, which I like. Yeah. But it's like, you know, this is a thing that anybody can pick up and read, I think, which is great. Yeah. Cool. That is Like a Sniper Lining Up His Shot. So next up, we've got A Zoo in Winter by Jiro Taniguchi. I'm going to actually tell people what a book is about for once.
Hey, Kevin, what's this book about?
Hey, come on, let me tell us what this book is about.
I didn't read this, so I'm going to take a break.
So, Zoo and Winters by Jiro Taniguchi. He's done a lot of stuff through Fanfare, the publisher. Like, they did some of the books?
Distant Neighborhood. What's the mountain climbing Ice Wander, one? It's the mountain climbing one. They're like three.
Summit of the Gods. Anyway.
It's still coming out.
He's a very prolific Japanese guy, and this is kind of a semi-autobiographical thing that he wrote about becoming a manga artist in the late 60s, early 70s, and it kind of follows his story of just moving up from like being in a job he didn't like, where he wanted to be a clothing designer, and then moving to Tokyo into this whole new world and becoming this manga artist. And it's like it's very interesting, I think.
Yeah, it was really compelling.
Like, a lot of it's about the process of manga. And it's really interesting to see how they made manga like back then, which is like sort of with these teams of people, which I think is how they still make stuff. Yeah, but it's like you'll have your main mangaka who runs a studio and he draws all the main characters and he has people who do his backgrounds and fill in his blacks. And they kind of,
it's a very studio system. It's like this guy has every task moved out and you do some really boring stuff, but it comes out fast, really fast.
And this is about that. And also about this guy kind of discovering who he is a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things I liked about this, not liked about, but just the difference between this and Drifting Life, which is another autobiographical book, or much more autobiographical book about the early days of manga, is this one had a lot more of like the character who's not Taniguchi, but based on him, like just gets involved with a lot of people and a lot of events in his life. And Drifting Life was very focused on like, I'm drawing comics all the time. And that was kind of more all that was to it. But.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me in a little bit of Disappearance Diary, which is another thing about a guy becoming a manga artist.
But losing his mind.
Disappearance Diary is really great. I mean, I know we're talking about this book, but Disappearance Diary, this guy loses his mind. He decides to be like homeless. He tries to hang himself from a tree, but he just falls asleep. Like he's like on a hill. It's amazing. But anyway, Zoo in Winter is like, I don't know. It's like a Taniguchi book. It's kind of hard to describe. All his books kind of have this mood. They're a little bit somber, but also wonderful. I don't know. I thought it was a great book. I just read it today, and I really loved it. I'm still processing it a little bit, but it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Zoo in Winter. Moving on to Zara's Paradise. God, we got a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
We can do this.
We're gonna do it. We're only 38 minutes in.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's kind of exciting about this is like, unlike the slog of the DC comics, this is the slog of trades, which almost all of them were really good.
Yeah, it's like, as much as we're talking about all these things at once, these are almost all like outstanding books.
Yes.
Yeah. We've curated almost all the best trades of the last month or so.
Yeah, I mean, there have been like, you know, 100 trades that have come out, but these are definitely the best or most notable ones. So Zara's Paradise. This is a graphic novel by two creators, Amir and Khalil, who, for reasons that will become evident when we describe this book to you, sort of choose to remain anonymous.
Yep.
And Jared, why don't you tell people what Zara's Paradise is about?
All right. So basically, which I didn't really pick up on when it happened because, you know, I'm an American. In 2009, Iran had elections for a new president. And for some foolish reason, they actually believed that they would be honest elections and that there would be a reformer candidate who had the vast support of the population of Iran, especially, which is a very young population, like a lot of the Middle East. And the country would move on towards some more changing, maybe more democratic, maybe more open. But there would be changes in the society.
Fools.
Yes. And it was the most blatantly stolen election ever. And that kind of shattered the hopes of all these people. And instead of just being broken, they all went out into the streets and protested. And of course, the regime went around and started killing and capturing people and torturing them and throwing them in jail. And that is where the infamous Neda, I believe. If you ever saw that, there was a woman who gets shot while she's in one of these protests. And the video of her dying made the rounds on the internet, and that was from these protests afterwards. And so this book is about a person whose brother disappears in the protests and riots afterwards, and it's all about his family trying to find him and what happened during that time. So, good times book.
Yeah, yeah, and it's very interesting because, like, on their quest to find out what happened, they're sort of revealing all this other stuff. Yeah. We'll say this is fiction. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, they said inspired by events, so it's like, you know, the people are obviously Iranian, and you know, it's all based on pseudo people, but it's, yeah, it's a fictional right. story.
It's very well researched, I feel yeah. like, but it's definitely like, you know, it can't all be taken as fact. But as no. they go around, they find out all these things about, you know, what the government's been doing.
Yeah,
and about this this sort of secret graveyard is like a big part of the story in this. And yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Obviously, it's a very depressing book. and it's not like a Persepolis or like you know, some of these other,
like Reading Lolita in Tehran or whatever.
It's like, yeah, yeah. It's definitely like a lot darker than yeah. than those books. But it's really well done. The art's a little amateurish, but it's also has a very sort of editorial cartoon feel to it at the same time. And
it's very it's a European in its style, where it's like very cartoonish faces with very realistic backgrounds, which a lot of European comics do. So,
all right, we still have a lot of stuff to talk about, so let's not talk about that book anymore. Let's talk about
what's next.
We'll talk about 1-800-MICE.
Yes,
this book is a lot different than Zara's Paradise.
Very similar though.
Is it very similar?
No.
Well, this is by Matthew Thurber. I think this was published in issues by Picture Box, and now most of it's collected into this book, I'm pretty sure. Nick, you read this thing today, this crazy book.
Yes.
Why don't you tell people what 1-800-MICE is about?
If you can.
If you dare.
Well, it's about... it's like a weird world where there's like anthropomorphic mice and horses and...
talking trees.
Yeah, well, the talking trees, there's an explanation for them, and it's really graphic, but
yeah, I don't think you can talk about that on here.
Yeah. No, there were some hangings involved. There was like two bands that were opposed to each other, and one was I don't know, it's really weird. One of them is like the Dapper Chaps, and they were all hung, and they created this race of trees when they died. And there's 1-800-MICE is basically like this company that sends mice out to help people with stuff. And it's really weird. I don't even know how to explain it. But at first I was like, this is all just like weirdness that doesn't make any sense. But as you go along, there's kind of a language, and there's kind of a like a plot that starts building up. And there's two different sides. There's like kind of a clear like bad guys and good guys. But then it's just constantly really, really funny.
Like, all right, I know that a lot of the listeners have not personally met Nick, but... I'm trying to say this as the greatest compliment I can. This is the sort of comic that I imagine Nick finishing someday in his comics career.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day, we don't ever talk about the stuff that we do. Nick does a comic called Real American Euro.
Yep.
Which is an autobiographical comic that he does on Tumblr.
Yep.
And you guys should take a look at it. We should definitely pimp our wares a little bit more.
Plug. Yeah. Where's the plugs?
Yeah, yeah. We need to have a section for plugs. But yeah, yeah. I mean, 1-800-MICE is.
I thought we were gonna do all the plugs.
Oh, are we gonna do that now?
We got more plugs.
Let's see. I do. Well, Eden.
I have a blog called Comic Scroll. It's comicscroll.com.
And you do comic reviews. You write about how much you love Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yes.
That's actually you. You're writing.
I gave it a 10.
Yeah, yeah, a 10.
Ah, that explains
a
10. It.
That was out of 100, though. And I do a webpage called Magnet Beam, magnetbeam.com. And we do like weird video game writing with lots of really awesome art. Nick reviews PlayStation 1 games on there for us.
Yep.
And he's working on right now on Rising Xan.
Yeah. I live on Greek time, so like PlayStation 1 just came out.
Yeah. Nick lives on GPT.
GPT.
But yeah, so anyway, those are some plugs, I guess. But yeah, so 1-800-MICE is insane. It's like hard to explain. It's like forming. We talked about forming recently, in that it will kind of start to melt your mind while you're reading it, and then your mind will form to what it is. And then it becomes a wonderful thing.
Read the quote by Matt Groening on the cover.
Oh, yeah, this kind of sums it up. 1-800-MICE reads like a mysterious oddball artifact from a much stranger and cooler parallel universe.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yep, that's pretty much that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it is utterly bizarre, but you should flip through it. If it looks at all interesting, you'll love it.
It's
if you
really
think this
funny
is the weirdest
too,
thing you've ever seen, don't buy it.
Yeah, and it's very picture boxy. So if you like stuff like Brian Chippendale comics, which I hate, so I
was about to say
that.
Yeah, I don't like his stuff, but I haven't read any Thurber stuff before. I really like this book.
Yeah, Matthew Thurber's cool too. he did our badges this year for the Small Press Expo, and those were pretty cool.
Yeah. Plug.
Plug.
You'll feel like you're like you'll feel like you're losing your mind like in the first like 20 pages, but then you'll start kind of regaining your mind.
I think Kevin said you reform it.
Yeah, you gain Matthew Thurber's mind. Yeah, then it all makes sense. Yeah, so that's 1-800-MICE. So let's move on to Daybreak. This is by Brian Ralph, who we all love.
Yep.
Yes. He does lots of comics about vaguely monkey-like people being trapped in caves and things like that. Yeah. Which Daybreak is still a little bit similar to that, I'd say.
Yeah.
But Eden, you just read this, right? Why don't you tell people what Daybreak is about?
It's basically, it's kind of done in second person. It's the characters are talking to you. So you never actually see the main character because it's you. It's about zombies. There's been some kind of zombie invasion or something. And
some
so,
kind, yeah.
not really explained.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're trying to survive zombie attacks. You don't actually see a lot of the zombies, which I actually think makes it much cooler.
Yeah.
And just kind of more intense.
It definitely builds up the tension a little bit by like you get glimpses of zombies. You see like their legs or like
their hands coming through a door.
Yeah, hands coming through a door. But it's pretty cool. It's besides like yourself, the other main character is a one-armed guy. And there's really funny things where like the main character, like that guy, the one guy with one arm, tries to do various things, but he has one arm, so like it makes everything so much more difficult.
Yeah, it's like trying to open a bag of chips.
But it's really creative the ways he does stuff.
Survives. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Brian Ralph always does really good stuff. This book reminded me a lot of a book called Morningstar. It's been coming out for the last couple of years, which I love. Which is published by this is actually published by Drawn and Quarterly, but Bodega, which is Brian Ralph's company, published Morningstar and published Daybreak in issues.
And chapters, yeah.
Yeah. And it also, for some reason, it reminds me a lot of A Boy and His Dog. Do you guys know that book movie by Harlan Ellison? Yep. I think the movie has Don Johnson in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It might.
But no, it's just like a very well-done post-apocalyptic kind of thing.
Like Ian said, I think the second person thing is what makes it extra compelling because they're talking to you. It's not just a narration you're watching. So like you never hear what you say to them, but they're reacting to it and you're drawn into the story and you're like, what did I just say? It was something important about zombies. And,
yeah, it's definitely awesome. A thing that people don't do a lot in comics.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And it makes it interesting. I actually can't think of another comic that's told that way. I'm sure there's one.
Probably Maybe. Eisner or, you know, Alan Moore when he's bored or something. But,
yeah, so that's Daybreak. I mean, it's good stuff, and it's a nice little hardcover. It's a cool book.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to... we're moving on to the last book of our sort of catching up, and then we're going to move on to this
graphic novel review.
Yeah, but this one's a whopper.
It's a humdinger.
This is
in more ways than one.
This is Habibi by Craig Thompson.
Only 650 some pages,
something like that, 674, something like that. But Habibi. Craig Thompson's been working on this book for 7 years. After finishing Blankets, he started working on this right away, and I mean, you can see where the work has gone into it.
Yeah,
all the art's really intricate. He does this sort of lattice work around the pages that's all hand drawn. It's completely insane.
Yeah,
and it's amazing. I mean, I'm gonna say it's probably one of the greatest graphic novels of all time.
Yeah, I'm pretty up there with you.
I will third that.
Yeah,
I haven't read it yet, but I was looking at it. It's like Craig Thompson never needs to do anything else.
Yeah, he doesn't. I mean, people have been asking me, is this as good as Blankets? And I'm like, this makes Blankets look like a pile of garbage.
it's so
just,
good.
The art's just masterful.
Yeah,
just everything about it is incredible.
Yeah. So the main story is about this woman, Dodola, who's a
girl,
a slave.
She starts out, she's a young girl at the beginning, but she is sold into slavery and sort of becomes a prostitute, and along the way meets this young child named Cham,
who's the son of a slave
she calls Habibi,
who she renames to Zam and then later renames to Habibi. But the sort of main story is there. I don't want to say it's a love story. Well, it is a love story.
Well,
that's
actually what Habibi means in Arabic.
It's more of
Habibi
like
means my loved one.
Yeah, so. It's more of like a connection between two people that are kind of caught up in this whole situation. Like they both escape from the same thing. They're both slaves, and they escape, and they live, you know, by themselves for a while, and they get separated and reunited, and it's just kind of the story about their lives, and it's incredibly moving and deep.
Epic, almost.
It is, and that's the framework for this, but all the other things going on in this book are like insanely, I don't know, it's like a lot of it's there's a part where Dodola's like she decides that she wants to become learned And so she goes to the library at the harem, basically, yeah, that she's a part of. And it gets a lot into like Aristotle's views of biology and how they relate to like these grids of like the Arabic language and numbers and stuff like that. Yeah. And it gets into a lot of like sort of cryptology stuff
and numerology.
And numerology. Yeah. And all that stuff's really interesting. And when I describe it, you know, it sounds like whatever. But when you read it, it's like, yeah, it's really fascinating.
Yeah. Like when I first started reading this, I was like, they would bring up stories from the Quran. And I was like, I don't know, like, what's the point of this? But then as you go along, like all the stories from the Quran that are in this, which are, you know, pretty often are relate to directly to what's happening in the comics, which are it's pretty crazy.
And the way the stories are told is very interesting because a lot of it's done in a, like, 1001 Arabian Nights style, yeah, where she's having to tell basically her slaver these stories. And she's telling Habibi these stories to sort of keep at bay his sexual desire that he starts to have for her as they grow older.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in this book. And one thing that's really interesting in it is the setting, which is Wanatolia, which is kind of this mythical land that's a combination of like ancient Persia and
modern day
and
Arabia, and
I mean it's really well crafted. It's confusing at first because you think it's an older story, but then you see there are like cars, and there's a part where they're like trapped in a sewer, and they're like
there's oil pipelines going across the desert,
and then part of it takes place in a modern city as well.
Pollution's a really big theme, like, you know, how that corrupts everything and that sort of stuff.
We could talk about this book
it's for so a heartbreaking long time. Kind of uplifting at the same time.
I think your point was right about the Arabian Nights. It's this giant mythical story that draws all these elements from different themes and places and times and weaves them all together masterfully. Amazing.
And all the stuff we're saying sounds like kind of pretentious and stuff, but it's not that pretentious. There's lots of fart jokes.
Yeah, there definitely are fart jokes in this.
There's actually a character in it that farts like constantly.
Oh, right. It's like, is it the dwarf?
Yeah. The master of dwarves, is that what he's called?
Yeah.
It's great. There's no lack of like humor and like, it's just, it's great. There's a drama. Everything you want from anything is in this. Like,
it's true. I was worried coming off of Blankets, which, you know, is a very precious sort of book, this was going to fall into some of the same traps that did and be a little too sentimental for me. But I mean, it is sentimental, but it's not
cloying.
It's all emotional. very genuine, and everything feels earned, and it's great. There's some really crazy stuff that happens. The characters go through some terrible things,
but it's always funny and heartfelt, and it's great.
It's amazing. Even at the end, I mean, I'm not going to say too much about the end, obviously, but there's like this hilarious joke at the end that kind of seals the whole book up, which is great. It's wonderful. I honestly think it's one of the greatest graphic novels of all time, if not the greatest graphic novel of all time.
Yeah, it's one of the top like five for sure.
And I read like 300 graphic novels this week. So.
It's definitely the top one we're going to talk about this week.
Yeah, but like Eden said, like that's mainly just us talking about the story. The art is so astounding, the amount of things he does with it. And like Kevin said, he's doing this very arabesque, you know, like intricate geometrical shapes is like the borders of things, which he did all by hand. And he spent a lot of time learning the Arabic alphabet so he could put in a lot of elements in the background and do quotes from the Quran and, you know, like mystical poets and stuff and write them in Arabic himself. And
yeah, and I actually learned something from one of our customers who said that you're not actually allowed to draw stuff in some places. So they would use the letters from Arabic to inform them into pictures.
Yeah.
Which is a way to get around not actually being able to draw things.
Which is a technique that Craig Thompson uses in this book as well, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, we could, like I said, we could talk about it forever.
Yeah,
But
I'm in the store. We'll talk to you more about it.
If you like things, you'll like this.
Yeah.
If you like anything.
If you like anything that was ever happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be your best day ever when you read this. Okay. So that's our big, those were all the graphic novels we kind of missed over the last month or so. I mean, there was some other stuff, but this was kind of all the big stuff.
The ones of notes and good ones. Yeah.
So now we're going to move into this week's comics. So there's going to be a little less quality, and that's going to start pretty much immediately with Avengers 1959. A book that definitely did not deserve that. All right, so this is Avengers 1959, number 1 of 5. This is Jared was hoping it was 1 of 2.
One of negative one,
and I got a refund for ordering this.
So this is by Howard Chaykin, who is, of course, famous for doing American Flag. I think this is a big book.
And
Black Kiss and other
drawing Blade.
Yeah. He's done quite a few things, but
not favorites for that.
But. He's done some good things here and there. There was a Jason Aaron issue of Wolverine that he drew that was actually really good.
I actually love the Blade series that he drew.
But I always thought Howard Chaykin was a better writer than artist. Yes. But his writing is terrible in this too. Yes. Anyway, who wants to tell somebody what this book is about?
I'm gonna start out by summarizing something that Craven says in this. All right, so picture Kraven the Hunter, you know,
he's got like bulky lion guy. Skins.
Yeah, he's lion skin. He's ready to kill Spider-Man, and he's all about hunting and killing. Yep. Well, in this comic, he's in love with Namora, who's, the
daughter of Namor.
Yeah, or queen, or I don't know.
I think it's his daughter. Anyway. His daughter.
Anyway, but she says, stop behaving that way. And he says something like, I love it when you talk dirty to me. Which sounds exactly like something Kraven the Hunter would say.
Exactly. Does he say after that, like, I will kill the spider?
Yeah, and then he's like, booyakasha.
He's also wearing a wife beater and boxer shorts in that scene.
Yes.
Oh, brap, brap.
Yep. And not leopard print boxer shorts.
Either. Okay, so that's a quote from the book. That is obviously kind of terrible, but do you want to tell people what the book's actually about?
It's based on something that started in New Avengers. There was a storyline in New Avengers that kind of went back and forth between present day and then the Nick Fury forming this Avengers teams in the right at the end of World War II to basically take down these like kind of Nazis that were infiltrating America. And then they were like, oh, that was pretty cool. Let's make a whole comic out of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then they did, and it wasn't pretty cool.
Yeah. Nope. Like it was actually drawn by Howard Chaykin in the New Avengers stuff, but it was written by Bendis. So it was a little better.
I didn't read that issue, though, because it was drawn by Howard Chaykin.
Only half of it was.
But, so, I mean, that's enough Avengers 1959. We don't care about this.
It's terrible. But, like, the thing is, like, it's got, like, so many, like, awesome characters in it. Like, not only does it have, like, this is an Avengers team that's led by Nick Fury, and it's got Kraven the Hunter, Namora, and Bloodstone, and Sabretooth, and Dominic Fortune, who are all awesome characters, but...
That says Silver Sable, yeah, but that's a dude with a mustache.
Yeah, it's got a Silver Sable that's not the
perhaps
original.
Perhaps it's the father Silver Sable.
Oh,
he's,
maybe.
He's the OG Silver Sable.
He does look like a silver fox.
Yeah, but it's just like, God, I don't even know how to, it's just terrible. It's really bad.
Oh, do you not know how to describe it? Well, don't.
Right. Let Eden do it. Her.
It's a good idea, but just bad.
Yeah, just bad. That's good enough.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's bad.
And all right. Out.
So moving on to a book by Osamu Tezuka. This is The Book of Human Insects.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. So this is an up and coming artist.
Yeah. He's a hip young guy.
This is the only book he's done, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Just does zines, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
A strong printed debut. He's a lot of web work.
He had a half a table at SPX. No. So Tezuka is obviously probably one of the most prolific and greatest comic creators of all time. He's done, I think, over 50 graphic novels.
More than that.
I think I read at one point that he had written over 10,000 pages of comics.
Yeah.
But
that's usually written and drawn.
Yeah. And this is actually, I think, one of the best books I've read by him, which is amazing because he has so much stuff that just hasn't been released in the U.S. at this point. But Jared, I mean, you just finished this just a few minutes ago, didn't you? Why don't you tell people what it's about?
This was my rush project. Again, this is another one that's really hard to explain, but it's basically a storyline where there's a girl who Toshiko Tomura, there we go, who is basically...
Hi.
Yeah. Hello. She's basically a prodigy in everything she's done. She's done, like, acting and, you know, design and all kinds of different kinds of things, and she's just been awesome in all of them. And so it's kind of following her. She's just kind of broken out with a prestigious prize, but then it finds out that she's basically stolen all the techniques and styles and everything from people she's been very close to and basically used them for their knowledge and then ditched them to failure and stealing all their stuff.
Yeah, and completely ruined all their lives.
Yes. And then it continues down that trail where it gets really darker and darker and more. It's one of those things where she's kind of the theme of the book, but it constantly introduces more characters who have been drawn in, often new characters from meter and just the terrible things that happens to everyone involved.
And they sort of all become entwined with each other as well in a lot of ways. And she, I will say, this character is a total sociopath.
Yeah.
She's
fascinating though.
Yeah, she is fascinating, but she's completely oblivious to, or just doesn't care how she destroys all these people. And, it's a very cold book.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, it's almost like a Stanley Kubrick movie, and like, it's, everything feels a little bit removed from, the action just to sort of show her personality. Like you were saying, she's kind of the theme of the book as well as the main character.
Right.
But there's a lot of really creepy stuff in this book too.
Yes.
I mean, this is something pretty early in the book, so I don't think it ruins too much, but she keeps a wax sculpture of her dead mother in her childhood home that she breastfeeds from.
Yeah.
And
sounds like one of my ex-girlfriends.
And I mean, that kind of tells you.
Yeah, that sets the tone pretty well. I mean, it's like the fourth page where someone is hung, or that is, yeah.
Yeah. Hung or hanged. I can never remember which one it is.
Well, that's both. Sure. Did she hang herself or was she hung?
Yeah, it's a mystery, actually. Yeah, and actually, there's a lot of mystery in this book. And I don't know. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is astounding.
I didn't read it because I wanted them to be like, I wanted there to be human insects in this, like people who turn into insects, and there weren't.
Well, it's more of the theme that people are, through their inhumanity, are turning into more insects and using each other. Actually,
boring.
Oh, that's true.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure it's great.
No, it is great.
Yeah. That's they kind of explain it later, that she's kind of like an insect who is trying to imitate other creatures to survive.
Yeah.
That's a person.
Through mimic.
Like mimic.
Like mimic.
It is like mimic.
It is like a lot like mimic. Anyway, it's a great book. And yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of Tetsuka, it's definitely worth checking out. Or like if you read stuff like Black Blizzard by Yoshihiro Tatsumi, which is another great book that I think has a similar tone to this.
Yeah,
it's good stuff. Anyway, so that's Book of Human Insect by Osamu Tezuka. Let's move on to Hark, a Vagrant by Kate Beaton. Probably a lot of people, I would assume, have seen Kate Beaton's stuff. She's the internet.
She owns the entire internet.
She does. She owns the internet. She bought it from Steve Jobs a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, she does historical comics and various comics, but I think her historical comics are kind of what have made her famous. So she'll do comics about, say, like the American Revolution, but they'll be hilarious.
Yeah.
But she also does comics about sexy Batman.
Yeah. And Bram Stoker.
And Bram Stoker and Bram Stoker's Dracula. She does these hilarious Nancy Drew comics. One of my favorite things in here, I guess Fat Pony is probably your most famous thing. It was just a Fat Pony. she does a series of comics that runs through here called Mystery Teens, which is my favorite, which is like what it would be like if teens actually solve mysteries.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's like the principal's like, somebody stole all the textbooks. And the Mystery Teens are like, well, find out who it is, and then they just go like behind a Safeway and smoke weed. So I mean, it's I love it. Well, I mean, you guys have all read this, I assume, or read her comic strips before, right?
Yeah, she's very smart, but also very approachable. Like, it's not going to be over your head,
right? Yeah, she'll kind of go to the lowest common denominator in a good way. You
right,
know?
Right.
It'll be like Rimbo talking to his lover or whatever, and then they'll like fart. But you know, it's great. All her comics are really funny, and there's if you've just read these online, there's a lot of like little extra stuff like commentary about the comics and stuff in here, which is you know a nice little added bonus. And no, it's awesome stuff.
Yeah, there's commentary in almost every page.
Yeah, which is very cool. Yeah. So no, it's a great book. It's Hark, a Vagrant.
It is amazing.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to Huntress number one.
What a segue.
This is
Hark, a Huntress.
This is written by Paul Levitz, who's famous for being old. The art is no, Paul Levitz is actually, you know, Paul Levitz, he wrote that great like History of DC Comics giant book that came out a year or two ago or whatever. But
he wrote that great Legion of Superheroes comic came out last week.
He does write Legions on Superheroes. The art's by Marcus Toe. I actually thought the art in this was pretty good.
I did like the art.
Yeah, but
it was good, yeah.
The story in this is pretty straightforward. It's like Huntress goes to Italy and there are prostitutes and guns that are being smuggled into the country, and
like you do.
She stops them. I don't know. It was like an episode of The Shield or something.
Yeah. It was like Batman with a woman in it.
it's fun, but there's nothing to it.
Yeah, it's like if you're a fan of the Huntress, I mean, she's the Huntress.
Yeah.
The character's like kind of has a weird history, so I'm a little bit curious to see how she's worked into the new DC universe, because one of the versions of the Huntress, I think the main one, is like from Earth 2 when she's like Bruce Wayne's daughter or something.
Yeah,
Bruce Wayne. But I assume that's not this.
No,
character. How do we know that? Maybe.
No, she's not called like Wayne. She's like Helena something or other.
She changed her name.
Helena Huntress.
Helena Huntress.
Yeah, but the art in this is really good.
Yeah,
and she's only in her lingerie for like five pages.
Yeah, it's really not that bad.
Yeah, yeah. It's not, it's certainly not like a voodoo level. But yeah, so anyway, that's the Huntress number one. It's it's interesting. You know, everybody's been picking up these new 52s, and DC's now launching a few other things. There's like this. There's the Penguin book that we'll talk about in a little bit. And there's a thing called My Greatest Adventure that's coming out. And a couple other ones. They're finishing up Batman Incorporated. But I don't know. I think this is probably a pass for most people.
Yeah. I mean, if you like the Huntress a lot.
I thought it was really fun. I mean, yeah. It's a miniseries, and it's pure escapism.
It is fun, yeah. But do you really want to...
Would you pay $3 for it?
Do you want to go buy the other issues?
Maybe. No comment.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the Huntress.
Yep.
It's comic.
All right. So moving on to Ladder Top Graphic Novel, Volume 1. This is written by Orson Scott Card and Emily Janice Card. Is that his wife or his daughter?
I don't know. There's a third card involved. I think
that's his wife.
That's his wife. Okay.
And then his daughter also did something on it. Nepotism going on.
And this was illustrated by...
Do it.
Honwell A. Ibardolaza.
Card.
I think that was a decent enough pronunciation of that, right?
I have no idea.
Of course, I say the name, I say it's decent enough, and then I said pronunciation. So I didn't get a chance to read this. There was a lot of stuff this week, but I know, Jared, you read this, right? Because you're a reading machine.
I did.
You don't look at the pictures.
I did read it. Well, I read most of it.
There you go. Go with most of it.
All right. So, Jared, why don't you tell people what it's about since you read all of it?
Okay. Basically, this is the beginning of a series in which aliens have come to Earth, but weird, giant, mysterious aliens who have basically gifted us with some technology to build giant space elevators up to space stations in space.
But wait, is there any space in this book?
There is, but the space is small because they designed the space within the space stations to be only big enough for children to get into, so that they train, Earth has now trained children up to go up and be like the mechanics for these space stations.
Spacey, man.
In space?
In space.
They're space mechanics. Are they space children?
Yes.
In the space station in
space. They become space children.
They take the space ladder of the space station in space.
Dude, I'm spacing out.
So that sounds like a decent enough setup. I mean, how does that... Does it turn into an action thing?
It's like Ender's Game with women, right?
That's basically all that's happened.
Oh, really? Book. So this is kind of just like the first framework. Act.
Spoiler.
Yeah, the main thing is the kids who are like trying to get into this program to go up into
space.
There you go. Thank you. yeah, so it's like, you know, it's very manga-esque. I don't know what you thought.
Well, the art is definitely...
The art definitely kind of has this 80s... manga feel. 80s, and that's the fun. That's probably the best part of it.
Yeah, it's got kind of a shoujo girl comics kind of look to it. And it seems to be, I mean, I'm talking about it as if I read it.
You're flipping through
it. But it seems to be like Ender's Game in that it's about a kind of a group of kids, right?
But girls.
Girls.
Yes.
Who seem like they're going to be competing with each other in some way.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. All right. So yeah, that's Ladder Top. I mean...
But yeah, good for young readers. It was an interesting start. I don't know what they're going to do with if they're going to be two or four.
I can't really imagine anyone's going to read this.
Unless
you like Orson Scott Card.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this is published by Seven Seas, so I didn't even know we're actually doing anything anymore. I haven't seen anything from them in a long. And Tor.
Oh, wait.
Tor, I just know is they publish a lot of fantasy books
and sci-fi stuff.
Yeah,
maybe but they're his real publisher.
Yeah, I think they probably publish. Yeah, they do publish all the Ender's Game and the weirder later Ender's Game books that are really strange. But, yeah, I mean, there's kind of a dearth of comics for young girls. Yeah. So it's, you know.
They don't want this.
Yeah, they want Polly and the Pirates because that's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do they want? You used to be a young girl.
Yeah, I don't know. I read X-Men.
So. There you go. They want X-Men.
They want good X-Men.
Yeah, they just want good comics. They're just people.
Right.
I assume.
They want Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yeah, yeah. They love it. They want to be like Starfire. They want to be a blank slate. Whore. All right, so moving on to Last of the Greats, number one. This is by the becoming very prolific Joshua Hale Fiakoff.
He gets around.
This guy is writing a lot of books right now. He's like Nick Spencer a year ago. This is a new book from Image. So I should say the art's by Brent Peoples. No relation to Mario Van Peoples.
No, sure.
But I don't know. I thought this was kind of a cool book. Nick, why don't you tell people what this is about?
Well, it's about like kind of a race of beings that show up on Earth, and they're kind of all superpowered, and they're all brothers and sisters in some way. And humanity doesn't they kind of accept them at first, but you know, like it says a lot about humanity in this. It's like uh, they they loved it at first, and then they were like, oh, these people are better than us, so we should take them down. So they all end up dead except for one of them, who's the last of the greats.
Yeah, basically these people come to Earth and they solve all of Earth's problems, yeah, basically.
Or try to.
But it seems like they take care of most of them. And they want to take our weapons away, and humans don't like that.
Yeah, and something bad is happening to Earth, and so the remaining humans are trying to get help from the last of the greats, and there's a crazy twist.
I thought it was a pretty interesting setup.
Yeah, it was
cool. Did you read this, Eden?
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, the art had a few moments where I was like, ah, and then it kind of let me down a bit. But it'd be good the rest of the time, and then there'd be a page I'm like, oh, dude.
The art's a little lackluster. The tone of the book was pretty decent, though. It reminded me a little bit of...
There's a lot of talking.
There is a lot of talking. I think that's because it's mostly just talking. Issue.
Yeah.
It reminded me in a lot of ways of Irredeemable.
Yeah,
in that there's this kind of superpowered guy who's now, not on the side of humanity.
Yeah.
And then it reminded me of The Sword a lot as well, actually, in a weird way. Really? Just because in The Sword you have these characters who are these, they're not really humans.
Yeah, these uber-powered.
And they have these weird relationships with each other. And I kind of see that in these characters of the greats.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was a decent enough start. Kind of the superhero thing turned on its head has happened a lot now. Yeah. We're not in the days of Astro City anymore where you can just like take superheroes and put a little twist on it and it's going to be interesting.
There's some unique twists in this, though, that make it a little stand out.
Yeah, there was a thing at the end that made me kind of want to read the next issue, but it certainly wasn't outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it might go somewhere.
Yeah, I could see it going somewhere. All right. So moving on, we've only got 4 books left.
Woo.
Yeah.
Will it never end?
I think this is going to be our longest podcast. We've had to stop it like 4 times so Nick can go pee. But to his credit, he's really drunk. All right. So next up is...
I have to be with all these comics. I know.
Next up is Penguin, Pain and Prejudice. This is written by Greg Hurwitz. And it's... Oh, geez, these people's names. It's written and it's drawn by Simon. I'm sure it's just Simon. Kudransky. And this is another new DC miniseries, like the Huntress thing that came out this week.
This is the new 53.
This is the new 54. This one.
54, is that what it is?
Yeah, but this is kind of just I actually really like this comic.
It was actually really good.
Yeah, it's just like a story of the Penguin, kind of like a mix of a sort of an origin story about him when he was younger, and then kind of showing like the kind of
deviousness.
Yeah, and the kind of weight that he carries as in the underworld as an adult.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it was cool.
Yeah, they did a good job of making him like really creepy. And there's like and also sympathetic at the same time, because you see his childhood and how he was like kind of neglected by his family. And he was really attached to his mother, but his dad was bordering on abusive. Well, no, he was pretty abusive, I guess.
Yeah, I thought there was a really cool line in this where he says, he's basically talking about penguins, and he's like, penguins, they can't fly, and they're also not graceful on land, but they're like vicious and they adapt to, whatever situation they're put in. Which I thought was kind of a cool take on the Oswald Cobblepot character.
Yeah.
I like to talk seriously and then have to say the name Oswald Cobblepot. But no, it's cool. And Batman shows up at the end. Spoiler. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler, right? I mean,
it's such a great show up though.
Yeah,
when he shows up.
Yeah. Just... So I thought this was fun. I mean, I don't know if did I say this before, but the Batman is like pizza thing.
I think you said that last week.
Yeah, basically the idea that Batman is like pizza. Even when it's not good, it's pretty good. But so this Penguin book was cool. If you like the Batman stuff, it reminded me a little bit of that Penguin one shot that came out about a year ago that I think was.
Jason Aaron.
Yeah, Jason Aaron and Jason Pearson maybe did the art for it. But anyway, it's cool. I always kind of like the Penguin. I love Danny DeVito in Batman Returns. So that's Penguin, Pain and Prejudice. Moving on to Pilot Season, The Test. I want to start out by saying, did they ever finish the last round of Pilot Season books?
We're still waiting on a final Robert Kirkman book.
Have any of the Pilot Seasons had a full season?
Yes. Well, Velocity
did 4 issues.
Well, other than that,
no.
Well, I think that was the...
Oh, you mean of just like the Pilot Season experiment, like one-shots?
I feel like there's been like maybe 6 Pilot Seasons and only one book that has been continued.
Yeah, Velocity is the only one I can think of.
That was from the first season. So then we're
wasn't from the first season. That was from like the second or third season.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, but the idea behind Pilot Season is basically they do a bunch of one-shots that are like first issues of a series.
Yeah.
And the people vote and they pick which one they think is the best. I'm going to bet they're not going to pick this one. This is The Test. This is by Joshua Helfiakoff, who we were talking about before, who writes a lot of stuff. And it's Rasan Ekdal. That's probably wrong.
Sure.
These people.
It's very high concept.
It is very, very high concept. Basically, a bunch of people wake up. It seems like the world is kind of taking a turn for the worse. And it's got lots of women walking around in skimpy clothes.
Yeah, lots of butt shots.
Lots of butt shots. And they find out they're there and stuff is going to happen.
They may be the last people on Earth.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
They're in like a
dome. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like something you've probably read before or seen on TV. And
yeah, it very much feels like kind of The Prisoner and a million other things.
Yep.
I don't know. Was anybody excited about this book?
No, not really. Not super excited, but I liked it enough that if it continued, I would kind of.
Yeah, if it was vaguely interesting, and if I read the second one for free, I would read it.
Well, there's a glowing recommendation.
I'd possibly read the second one for free.
Yeah, I might read the second one. I don't know, but yeah. So that's the test. I mean, there, you know, I imagine they're going to be five or six of these pilot seasons.
So you'll probably never see a second one of
them. Yeah. So that's the unfortunate thing about these. Yeah. It's like you buy them, and if you like them. So a lot of times it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Got to vote.
Yeah. Like there was one called Stealth. I mean, the last one hasn't finished yet, but there was a really great Robert Kirkman one called Stealth. And it's about this this guy dealing with his father, who used to be a superhero, now has Alzheimer's.
Yep.
And kind of goes out patrolling and does crazy stuff. And it was a really interesting concept for a series, but we'll probably never see the light of day.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to, oh, God, I love this book. This is Snarked Number One by Roger Langridge, who's a wonderful man who graced us with his presence just recently at Big Planet Comics in Vienna.
For a signing. And then he was also at SPX.
He was.
People who saw him there.
He drew me an excellent picture of Popeye.
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah. It was really amazing. But so Langridge, Snarked is basically about the walrus and the carpenter. It's from the poem that Tweedledee and Tweedledum tell Alice in the Lewis Carroll book. And he fleshes them out into these kind of rapscallions who are always trying to get food. Yeah, and
bumbling connivers.
Yeah. But the major story in this is basically the king is dead or missing.
Missing.
And his daughter takes the crown, but all these sort of advisors.
Unscrupulous advisors.
Yeah, basically. Like very Game of Thrones-y kind of advisors. Think that she isn't malleable enough, like she's not going to listen to what they have to say, so they're trying to kill her. And basically she takes refuge with the walrus and the carpenter, and that's basically the setup for this whole series.
Yeah, she's also running around with her baby brother.
That's true.
In tow.
Yeah. And it's very funny. She's the Red Queen basically as a child. The Red Queen from Alice in Wonderland, which is very cool, I think. And no, I love this. I mean, I assume we all really like this, right?
Yeah. Who wouldn't like this?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. It's great for kids, but it's super smart. And his Roger Langridge's cartooning is amazing. I own a page from his Muppet Show comic, and it's like, I look at it and I can't believe that a human drew it. I mean, he's so good. Yeah, but that's Snarked. I mean, I think we talked about the Zero issue on here before, and we all love that. And that kind of set up the characters, and now this is kind of setting up the story.
Yeah.
And it's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It already is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to, this is our last book of the week, and it's a good one. This is Strange Talent of Luther Strode, number one. This is by Justin Jordan and Trad Moore. And this is the first issue of a 6-issue miniseries from Image. Now, when I read this, I felt like this was going to be kind of maybe like the next big Image book, like a Chew or who was Jake Ellis.
Orc Stain or something amazing.
Yeah. So Jared, why don't you tell people what this book is about?
All right, so this basically takes the concept of all these old Atlas commercials that you always saw in the old comic books where it's like, hey, kid, you know, hey, nerd, tired of being picked on by all the big bullies, you know, send off for our Get Fitness program and you'll turn yourself into a He-Man and defend yourself. And so there's this nerd kid who's getting beat up in high school and sends off for the Hercules program, which does not make him look super muscly, but does give him super strength and basically is turning him into a superhuman level guy. And it's kind of the idea of like, if you were then put in that position where you could take revenge on all these people who've been mean to you, how would it corrupt you basically?
And the answer is a lot and very bloodily.
Yes.
Yeah, this is one of the bloodiest comics I think I've ever read.
It is very graphic.
It is very graphic, but it's very cartoony as well. Yeah, so yeah, it kind of gets away with it, and it doesn't seem, I mean, I shouldn't say it doesn't seem gratuitous because it is the definition of gratuitous, but no, the art's cartoony enough that it gets away with it. I will say the color palette in this, I almost was going to list the colorist, but it's Felipe Sobriero. He does the coloring in this is really good.
Yeah,
which is, I know, a weird thing probably to a lot of people to mention. But there are literally parts in this where people are running around in like floods of blood.
Yeah.
And you kind of find out that maybe there's a little bit more behind this whole Hercules program.
There's a lot more behind it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a lot more. But yeah, I don't know. Something about this book. This sounds really, it just popped. It did, though. There was some, I mean, it sounds so stupid.
Much like the characters.
Yeah, whose heads popping. Yeah. No, but there was just something like, it was a very exciting book to read, I felt like. And
it was very well written. And it was a little bit of the Peter Parker thing where it's like, nerdy guy finally starts like getting, you know, what he's always feels like he's deserved or whatever.
Yeah, it's like if Peter Parker, instead of like trying to hide his powers from everybody, was just like, I'm just gonna beat the crap out of all of you.
Yeah, it's basically like he gets all this power and then just gets completely corrupted.
Yeah, it's like if Peter Parker literally knocked Flash Gordon's block off.
Yeah.
Flash Gordon.
Or Flash Gordon. Flash Thompson. Sorry, we're like an hour and 20 minutes in.
Or Flash Gordon.
Or Flash Gordon. Or whoever.
He could take him.
Yeah, but yeah, no, but I thought this was a really cool first issue. It was a lot of fun. Like I said, super violent. I think like Invincible level of violence.
Yeah.
Which people probably don't look at Invincible and think it's violent, but there's a part where somebody gets strangled with their own guts in Invincible. And there's a lot of guts in this. I don't know. I loved it. Did you guys all? I assume everybody liked this, right?
I enjoyed it. And it's not really my kind of thing overall, but it's well done. It's well written. Art's great.
Cool.
It was my kind of thing. I think it was the best comic, best comic of the week for me.
Yeah. Best comic of the week.
It was my bag.
Yeah. No, I loved it. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, the best comic in a week full of comics.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't as good as Habibi, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were
comic book, not graphic novel.
Well, issue wise,
and Habibi was a few weeks ago, so this week, So, yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, this was a long haul this week, so we apologize. Maybe do we apologize?
No, I'm gonna go take a nap.
Yeah. I'm gonna say, look at all the cool content you get for extra free.
All right, so Nick's gonna go take a nap. I'm probably gonna go play video games, and yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
All right.
Peace out.
Bye.